You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Before Greg Gutfeld was a Fox News star and a New York Times best-selling author, he was a self-help writer for health magazines who had no idea what he was talking about. But now, after years of experience, he finally feels qualified to guide people on the journey of life with his new book, The Plus, Self-Help for People Who Hate Self-Help. And today, Greg returns to the podcast to share some of the lame self-help advice that he used to give in magazines like Maxim and Men's Health, why he generally abhors self-improvement books and still hates himself just a little for writing his own book now. He explains his deceptively simple binary system for living a better life, offers some advice on coping with the quarantine, and reveals how Greg is entertaining himself during the pandemic. Plus, how humans are mimicking robots instead of the other way around. Greg talks about his most hated segment ever and the time he put on a second-grade puppet show of the Watergate hearings. Coming up with Greg Gutfeld in just a moment. Greg Gutfeld is a New York Times best-selling author, satirist, humorist, and magazine editor. He's the host of The Greg Gutfeld Show and co-host of The Five on Fox News. Prior to joining Fox, Gutfeld was an editor of Men's Health magazine. He later became the editor of Stuff, helmed Maxim magazine in the United Kingdom, and was host of the legendary cult TV phenomenon Red Eye. And now he's out with a new book titled The Plus, Self-Help for People Who Hate Self-Help. Greg Gutfeld, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I guess the subtitle of your book says it all, Self-Help for People Who Hate Self-Help. Do you count yourself among those people?
Yeah, because I was one of those people. So I worked in service journalism and Prevention Magazine and Men's Health. So I was at a young age dispensing advice to people far older than I was. So I'm working at a health magazine, writing health advice for people in their 50s and 60s. And I'm like 24, drinking every night, eating terrible food, you know, waking up with a hangover, but I'm telling them how to live their lives. So I understood that self-help writers are often huge hypocrites. And they're often fairly miserable people. And I was obviously a hypocrite, not miserable, but I was a hypocrite. So now it's flipped. I'm now that age. I'm 55. I have this weird thing now called wisdom, which is what happens when you get older, which we tend to forget about. And so now it's like, wow, maybe I have something that I can actually give advice about, which is like life, or in this case, kind of like the chaos of today. And the other side of the fact that I'm always a little, you know, self-help. I always felt it to be really cheesy. Because if you ever read magazines where there was advice, it was always the same kind of cheesy advice. It was either, like, you know, drink 8 glasses of water a day, you know, when always have a strong handshake at a job interview. It was, it's all the same. It's the kind of articles that you read in airline magazines when you're like, you're dying to read something and there's like 7 tips to nail that job interview. And you read it and you go like, I'm adult knows all these, like, show up on time, wear a clean shirt. So that service journalism never had any inventive or unorthodox or surprising answers. It was all just, and it was because the people writing it were just trying to fill a word count, you know?
Yeah, I'm someone who's always been skeptical of self-help. And, you know, when I first heard that you did a self-help book, I'm like, oh God, don't demean yourself, Gutfeld.
That's exactly how I felt.
But having read it now, I can honestly say that The Plus ranks right up there with Dennis Prager's book, Happiness is a Serious Problem, as probably the only two self-help books that I have ever, A, enjoyed, and B, ever gotten anything out of. So for whatever that's worth.
Oh, that's awesome.
And the other thing that I like about your book is that this is not that complicated. It doesn't require an enormous amount of soul searching or revisiting your childhood and that sort of stuff. You have it all boiled down to a pretty simple binary system for self-improvement. Explain your whole plus-minus philosophy.
Well, it's so simplistic that you might consider it idiotic, but it was something Dan Bongino said this to me. He goes, Greg, this is so obvious, but no one's really ever said this before. That's how Dan Bongino talks. And so he's like, I never thought of this before. But it's basically before every kind of action that you're about to undertake, whether it is tweeting or texting or talking, you ask yourself, is this a plus or a minus? Mm-hmm. And if you feel it's a kind of an obvious question, and it's at the root of all impulse control, but we never really talk about it. And the thing is, at least for me, I could use what would you call like a steroid for my impulse control? And this is kind of that. This is like the top spin, the thing that makes my impulse control better, because I have an inclination towards negative activity. I mean, if somebody tweets at me or tweets at you calling you a loser or I'm a loser, you would probably just like, this guy's got 6 followers. See you later. But I might respond.
I would respond. I can't help myself. I respond to anything.
But I mean, it's like you should. That's a negative. And it's like you have to learn, like, okay, there's a path, positive or negative, which way you're going to go. Mm-hmm. And so that helps me kind of diminish the mistakes that I make. But it really is, if you were trying to explain this to somebody over 70, they'd go, you're an idiot. We used to call this impulse control,
right,
or personal responsibility, or just being a nice person.
Yeah.
This is called being polite. And I would agree with them, because I do feel like we see impulse control or advice over impulse control as moral judgment, which is wrong. Like telling people to be better is wrong. You can't do that. So now you have people saying that looting is now reparations. You can't say, no, looting is crime.
Yeah. Right.
So I think it's like, it was a book for myself.
Yeah.
That's what it was, because I think that I could use some assistance in impulse control.
And it's interesting that you decided to publish a book about positive being at a moment when so many people are down in the dumps and struggling to find some kind of silver lining to this whole pandemic. Do you think there's some advice in here that can be applied to the current moment?
Yeah. In fact, that was what was weird about this book in general is that, you know, when you have a book contract, they tell you what you're going to do. You know, I had a book that I was supposed to write for 2021. So this year was clear. It was like, you don't need to write a book because we're not going to know what's going to happen in the election until November, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, right, yeah.
But I kept thinking about this stuff, mainly the mobbery and the cancellation culture that I was seeing. And like, I keep writing about these problems, but I didn't have any solutions. And I was thinking, well, what if I tried? And then I started thinking about this plus minus thing. So I actually contacted my publishing company and said, I know I don't have a book do, but I think I could write a really short book. And then of course the book always, like, I was thinking like it was gonna be like 40 pages, like a little pamphlet you could put in your back pocket. But then it just, like, they're like, no, that doesn't sell. You gotta make it into a book. And I go, crap. So I ended up writing the book. But all of these chapters play into, for example, the pandemic. When the book went to the printer, was in February, maybe. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, holy, the biggest story in my lifetime was the pandemic at that point. It's well, since 9/11. And so I added an extra chapter, and I incorporated all the tips from the book into that chapter. One of them is being like creating a curriculum that if you're going to be tied off from the rest of the world, it's very easy for you to go in a negative space, gain weight, watch a lot of TV. That's probably it. Gain weight, watch a lot of TV, and create a lot of negative anxiety from being on social media. Mm-hmm. When in fact, what you can do is, and I have a whole chapter on creating your own curriculum, which was written before this. It was just basically to make yourself better, which is like, okay, what can you do alone? You can just start out by going introduction to, you know, garage rock guitar. And then you have like, you can get a cheap parlor guitar off Amazon for like $30 or $40. The price of a seamless meal in New York, a cheap seamless meal. And then you can tune it, and you can just learn. You can spend 20 minutes, 30 minutes a day. You can learn a language. You can start reading up on philosophy. I think I started like reading up on the introduction. The thing is, go on YouTube, you write introduction to whatever.
Right. It's all Stoics. There.
Stoics. You get 100. You can just sit there and go, suddenly you know more about Stoics than any philosophy major.
Right.
If you type in guitar for idiots, you can learn, you know, everything, every major hook, every major Beatles hook. Mm-hmm. If you want to learn a language, or if you want to learn any kind of exercise without weights, these are things that you can actually do at home that will keep you from going crazy.
Right. And when else would you ever have time to do all of these things? There's so much opportunity for self-enrichment during all this. So what is that for you? Are you learning something new these days, taking up a language? What's your outlet during COVID?
For me, my gym closed, so I had to figure out a way to keep from turning into a ball of fat. You know, I'm a short guy. 10 pounds on me looks like 30 pounds on other people. So I had to figure out. So I got a bike inside and learned how to do weights with just like, you know, 3-pound weights. And that was just like, so I.
Yeah, that's productive.
You created your own major and minor.
Yeah, I love that. So what else in your book can be applied to quarantine life?
Other things are about like resisting the blame game, resisting the prison of two ideas, learning to adapt and adjust. And also, and I think I kind of like stole this idea from Tom Shalhoub and Scott Adams, which is you got to turn anxiety into curiosity. Mm-hmm. This was something That's that great. I learned when I was traveling with Tom Shalhoub, because I'm a terrible traveler because I'm filled with anxiety. And it's like, oh my God, we're in a bus for 3 hours and it's supposed to be terrible weather. And I don't know if we're going to get there on time. And Tom's going, Greg, it's an adventure. It's an adventure. And it's like how a father deals with kids.
Right, exactly.
He would tell me that like the kids would be trudging along when they're doing touristy things in New York. And he'd try to pretend like you're in the mountains and who knows what could happen. And so, and Scott Adams has kind of the same philosophy about when you sense bad things are happening, no matter what, your curiosity factor is going to make it interesting, and you're going to learn something, and it's going to overtake the dread. And as somebody who is, you know, I make a living off dread. I mean, I'm a dread zombie. The idea of letting curiosity take control is really smart, especially with the pandemic, because you're watching every single element of your life be shaken up.
Yeah.
Employment, recreation, definitely, socialization, relationships. You know, it's like it could drive you crazy unless you're curious about it.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll return with more when we come back in just a moment. It's amazing how timely this book is. And by the way, there is one line in your book that I think perfectly addresses the COVID crisis. It's in the final chapter. Greg Gutfeld says, quote, "I realized that my role is to infect everyone around me with whatever I have." I think I'm just going to end the podcast now and leave folks with that. How about that?
You know what this, I think you summed what this it up. Came from? It came from the fact that whenever on the five, so I play a lot of unusual music on the five, you know, a lot of Melvins, a lot of Killing Joke, a lot of Cramps. I find this music, this is my music that I grew up on, Ramones and The Clash and The Jam. But like people like Jesse, you know, who's who has fairly conventional, I'll say boring tastes, is like, what's your problem? Like, why do you do this? And it's like, well, that's how it's always been with me in conservatism and politics in general, was that I was always the odd person out. And I wasn't there to join the Young Republicans mm-hmm. or to join a conservative group. I was there to make them more like me. That, like, you know, it wouldn't be such a bad idea if they did listen to different music, or if they did wear fewer pairs of khakis, you know, and or if they just tried other yeah. things. Like, you don't have to listen to country music every day, Dana, you know. And by the way, the Ramones is just sped up country music. And so it is my way with music and in general, my behavior, like Red Eye.
Yeah, let's talk about Red Eye, because on the face of it, there is no reason Red Eye might have been a logical fit for Fox News. I'm sure Fox wasn't exactly itching to get into the late show business. It's a super competitive field, and at first it probably seemed way off brand for Fox News. But what you were able to do there was to create something totally new. A show that, first of all, was completely different than anything on Fox News, for sure, and also totally different from any show in the late night space at that time. But I think that's because most late night shows aren't such a direct reflection of the host's personality like it was on Red Eye. Red Eye was all you.
Red Eye was an attempt to infect Fox, right? It may have been at 3 a.m., but we had a lot of Fox employees on there, and my sense of humor and weirdness did end up on The Five. And there's a lot of segments on The Five that has that virus in it. Mm-hmm. I toned myself down. I'm on at 5 o'clock. There's not as many poop jokes, but there's one or two poop jokes.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, you see people incorporating a lot of that stuff elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So it's like,
right.
The idea is, I don't want to become like other people, because I don't think that helps. Mm-hmm. It's the opposite of mimetic theory, you know, mm-hmm. where you copy people. I want people to like just chip off a little bit from me, so introducing people to this kind of music is my way of doing it. So that's my job, is to bring something. And conversely, what if you became a liberal? What could you do for the Democrats to help them?
Right.
I would think that, okay, you don't have to be rebellious or radical, because they clearly believe they have all that nailed down. What they could use is more common sense and more forgiveness. And I look at a parallel for this would be somebody like Brett Weinstein. He's from Evergreen. He was part of the, I listened to his podcast, and he's like a progressive leftist, but it's like he brings kind of an element of common sense and forgiveness, and I hope I say it right. Conviviality?
I don't know.
But I don't know either.
Yeah.
But it's like the idea that you can still talk to a Trump person.
Right.
And so by bringing that over, he's importing that into that world.
Yeah.
The same way I'm trying to import some of that stuff into that world, in my world.
Right. And, you know, I kind of feel like that about The Five. Do you think that maybe just the fact that you have so many co-hosts with a diversity of opinions liberates you from kind of what you call the prison of two ideas and that impulse to turn every discussion into a political death match?
Yeah. And you know, what's funny is like, I get a little bit irritated when I hear the conventional talking points from any side. And mm-hmm. I think it's one of the things about The Five is that we do call each other on it when we use phrases that we've heard from other shows, or and that's why you often find stuff shocking on The Five, is that we kind of like, we all like are cognizant of not saying the same stuff you hear mm-hmm. elsewhere. And I hope that's also an influence for me. But I think like even Jesse surprises me now, you know, and I never thought that Jesse could surprise me, but I've told him that. So it's nothing he didn't know. I once said to Jesse, Jesse will never be able to say you heard it here first. And I said that to him, and he was going, you know, you're right. You're right. I'm never the person to say it first. It's pretty funny, but it's like, it is like, that's, we challenge each other to, and I always, my impatience comes from, you know, mm-hmm. whenever the liberal says something that you hear from another liberal, drives me crazy. I want new antagonism or a new kind of argument.
Well, we're certainly on the same page with that. I am so sick of hearing the same buzz phrases and talking points across three or four different shows every day. It's like, for God's sake, have an original thought, or at least bother to take a talking point and repackage it a little bit or rephrase it.
Yeah,
most of these are like watching talk shows hosted by robots. And talk about a segue there. I remember last time I talked with Dana Perino. She told me Greg is obsessed with artificial intelligence and you have to talk to him about AI. And that comes into play in your chapter about the unbending mind. It's funny because the theory has always been that AI is supposed to mimic humans. But instead, right now, we're seeing humans who are mimicking machines. Walk us through the connection between artificial intelligence and the sort of intransigent unpersuadables out there.
Well, you know what it was? It was, I'd read so much on artificial intelligence, and what was so terrifying about it is it's unbending.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't plead with it. So I can't think of the guy's name who wrote Superintelligence off the top of my head, but he uses this paperclip machine analogy that if you create an AI whose job is to create paperclips and you don't have an off switch or something, the unbending nature of its non-conscious thinking is that it will make everything into paperclips, including you,
right,
and the entire planet. And it will find ways to break out into the universe, to keep creating paperclips. I'm really doing injustice to this analogy, but it's—
Right, but I'm familiar with it. I think it's Nick Bostrom that you're thinking of, right?
Yes, Nick Bostrom.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, and so the idea is you kind of see that with leftism. They refuse to take yes for an answer. So when you have people saying, you know what, we also agree that George Floyd, that video was terrible, and we need to fix that. That's not enough. They have to go. There's an unbending nature to it. But mm-hmm. you also see it whenever you're trying to get get a balance on your bank account from a phone recording, and if you flunk anything, it just freezes you, and there's no way to argue. Or if you're trying to talk your way out of a traffic mm-hmm. ticket, or actually, let's say a parking ticket, where the attendant refuses to look up. And it's just like, these are all unbending minds, mm-hmm. but you do find it. And the thing is, it is positively frightening how almost non-conscious it is.
Mm-hmm.
It is non-conscious thinking. There is no, they believe that dialogue is weakness. So they just go straight to the end. So mm-hmm. when they say revolution or change, it's never going to be enough. The revolution
right.
will keep going. And the change will keep going. We'll keep making paperclips until there's nothing left but paperclips. So that's kind of my allegory, is that analogy is that the left right now is a paperclip making machine. They don't see an end to what they're doing.
So when you encounter an unbending mind in person or on social media, perhaps, how do you deal with that person? Or do you? Maybe you just tune it out. What's your strategy?
Well, I think there's that first step. Well, A, cross the street, because there's no, you're not going to win. If it's actually you're in the same place with somebody,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to get that person from screaming at you to stop screaming. So you have to get out. I always feel bad for the person trapped in the car,
mm-hmm.
because I don't know anything they do is going to be wrong.
Yeah.
But first off is the, I hear what you're saying kind of thing. I always give like an inch in order to later take, a mile. And so I always go I hear what you're saying. I used to, I feel like you're making a point here, but I would add, I always kind of like try to dig it in, and then maybe that softens it a little bit. And that tends to work mm-hmm. on normal people, but people who are intensely miserable or unhappy or antisocial, they will not even take,
yeah.
they will take your acquiescence as a sign of weakness.
Sure. Sure.
The first thing to do if you think you're in a conversation is to give them an inch or two, and also, who knows, they might be right on something. So the other thing too is actually willing to listen and go, okay, so maybe maybe police brutality is a serious issue, and tell me what statistics you have, rather than videos. You need to tell me what the statistics, because I keep reading these other statistics, and I need to, maybe we can get to a point where we can both agree that there's something going on, but it may not be what you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
But no, probably doesn't work.
Maybe not, but at least you tried, Well, as we wind down, I was interested to read how your life has come full circle with Red Eye, then The Five, and The Gutfeld Show. this is really the realization of a lifelong dream for you. You talk in here about watching all the great old talk shows like Merv Griffin and Mike Douglas, and you would put on shows yourself as a kid. In fact, I've even heard this story that you were in second grade when you actually put on a puppet show of the Watergate hearings. Why does that not surprise me, Greg? Is that true? And how did that go over with an audience full of second graders?
It did not go over at all.
No.
Because, you know, what was weird was I didn't know if I wanted to be on TV. I just loved talk shows.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Merv Griffin and Mike Douglas and Johnny. I just loved that stuff. Those were that was my sports growing up, was watching that stuff, getting home and watching afternoon talk shows. And so I thought, so it was Mad Magazine had, I love Mad Magazine. It's got to be 1972 or something. And I actually tore out the back and forth between Nixon and Agnew and somebody else. Nobody knew what I was doing. And so I had my friend Doug Ridgway, and I don't know who he played, but we had like a puppet show in summer. I think it was summer school or second grade. Nobody laughed. And it was just like these little puppets doing this dialogue from Mad Magazine about Watergate. And nobody understood it. Nobody even knew what I was talking about. But that was my...
So not much has changed, has it?
Nothing has changed. I'm used to silence after I say things.
Well, Greg, I really enjoyed the plus. There's some absolutely great stuff in here. And I have to tell you, there's something that I'm really, really, really hoping that you will bring back on the Gutfeld Show to promote this latest book. For your last book, you came up with this unusual gimmick to plug your book on the Gutfeld Show. You gave an interview to a guy in a dolphin suit. Did you or will you revive the dolphin report for this book?
One of the most hated things I've ever done.
Really? I love
that. I love that. I mean, only true Red Eye fans,
because
that was on the GG show,
right?
Got that. But it was, I was interviewed by a dolphin.
Oh, that segment brought me so much joy.
It's fantastic.
It reminded me of the kind of things that David Letterman used to do in the early days of Late Night. And I love how committed you were to the bit. I'm all about the dumb gag that keeps going and going and going way beyond the audience's comfort level. So you may have a lot of Dolphin Report haters out there, but you at least have one very, very big fan right here.
I mean, you know what? You're going to make me now go look it up. Because I haven't seen it since I did it. And now I bet it's on YouTube. I have to go find it. You know what the
issue was? It was weirdly genius.
I wanted it to go way long just to piss everybody off. And I think it went 4 minutes, which was, you don't even do 4 minutes for a normal segment interview on a book. But to do it with dolphins asking you questions.
That was,
you know what?
Perfect.
I should do that again.
Yeah, you absolutely should. I insist.
With a different animal.
No. Don't you dare.
I know dolphins.
You can't
we'll
do a land
dolphins.
Animal or anything too cute. It only works because dolphins are, let's be honest, a little bit weird and a little bit out of place and maybe even a little bit annoying. It works because it is a literal fish out of water.
No, we'll keep it to dolphins.
I will tell you this, Greg. Immediately after seeing the Dolphin Report, you did inspire me to crash my wife's bridal shower, dressed up in a full-on raccoon costume, handing out Beanie Babies and Mexican candy for really no particular reason. And that goes directly back to the Dolphin Report. So congratulations. You did succeed in infecting me with a little bit of your weirdness.
Well done.
Well, once again, Greg's book is called The Plus, Self-Help for People Who Hate Self-Help. Go get it. Greg Gutfeld, it is always a pleasure, sir.
Thanks, buddy. Take care.
Thanks again to Greg Gutfeld for coming on the show. Order his new book, The Plus, Self-Help for People Who Hate Self-Help, on Amazon, Audible, or wherever books are sold. Watch Greg every weekday on The 5 and every Saturday on The Greg Gutfeld Show, both on Fox News. And follow Greg at ggutfeld.com and on Twitter at Greg Gutfeld. If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us while you're there. 5-star ratings and detailed reviews are one of the best ways for new listeners to discover the show. You can also follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at @KickAssNewsPod and recommend us to your friends on your social media. For more fun stuff, visit kickassnews.com, and I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.